Tune in as author and publisher Joshua Schmoody and renowned talk show host Susan Brinder interview authors, artists, business entrepreneurs, political activists, musicians, and academics to discuss what it means to live the high life. A life of total abundance, joy, passion, and fulfillment. A life where your dreams become realities through the empowering medium of knowledge. Learn something new from book publishing and product distribution, public relations, to politics, psychology, and philosophy. If real-world knowledge interests you, then tune in and start living your higher life today. Hi, everyone. This is Joshua Schmoody, and I'm here with my co-host, Susan Brinder, and welcome to another episode of High Life, a show where you can start living your best life now through the empowering medium of knowledge. And today we have a very special guest. We have Mr. Jeff Harner. Mr. Jeff Harner, are you on the line?
I am on the line.
You know, let me just tell you something, Josh, a little bit about Jeff Harner. Jeff Harner happens to be one of the most incredible cabaret artists. He's traveled all over the world, really doing a show called Too Marvelous for Words, probably songs from the 30s. And I'm sure, Jeff, that you've been updating your shows to the 40s, to the 50s, 60s, and beyond. But what makes you so special is that, first of all, you've got a great voice. You're a fabulous pianist, and you really understand.
I don't play the piano. No.
Okay, then I made a mistake. But you know what? I'm giving you credit for more than I should. But you know what? You are.
But I'm bringing a fabulous one with me.
Mr. Rybeck. That's correct. Well, with that said, I want to really tell the audience that if you want to listen to the music, the standards, the most wonderful wording of songs that kind of depict romance, kind of depict a dream that you've had, you have to listen to Jeff. He celebrated songs of Cole Porter, Richard Whiting, Johnny Mercer, and a whole bunch of other people who really are special, like Judy Garland and Bing Crosby and Jimmy Durante. It's been a real pleasure listening to his music, and I think that our audience is going to appreciate listening to what he has to say about how music affects people in ways they can't even describe. So, Jeff, you know, jump in. Let's hear a little bit about you.
Well, first of all, I want to make it clear that the show that I'm bringing both to the Delray Beach Playhouse and to the Meisner Cultural Park in Boca is a celebration of the lyrics of Sammy Kahn. And Sammy Kahn wrote in the 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, as far as what we're going to cover. And he is a lyricist who had more Academy Award nominations than any other songwriter. He had 26 Academy Award nominations and 4 wins. And he put more words in the mouth of Frank Sinatra than any other songwriter. So that's what they will hear, your listeners, if they come to see the show. It's called Sammy Kahn All the Way, after one of his Academy Award winning songs, All the Way. And we shine the light on Hollywood, Sinatra, and World War II is the scope of what we're focusing on. And I think everyone will know virtually every song in the show. Hopefully we'll have some surprises on how we've arranged them. But that's what we'll be doing. And that is what I love to do. I especially love celebrating the lyricists. And I'd love to put wonderful, wonderful, witty, and passionate lyrics into my mouth because it makes me look very clever.
Well, that's a good reason. But I have to ask you this. You know, the lyrics of those songs were incredible. They told a story. And they were just, as I said before, very romantic and kind of special in many ways. But today they do songs that you don't even understand the words. What's changed? Why did that disappear?
Well, I mean, my personal opinion is that what changed is that how we get our music has schismed. Used to be there was your hit parade, and there, you know, when television came around, there were three channels. and the pop songs on Broadway were the ones that crossed over into the popular standards of the day. Now, in the 50s with Elvis Presley, the Beatles in the 60s, it's just schismed. And now with the internet where we can have, hundreds of channels of how we get our music, it's not that there isn't wonderful music being written. There absolutely is. You just have to know where to find it. Because it's not necessarily what's hitting the top of the pop charts these days. But there are, just looking at Broadway today, there's wonderful music being written by Steve Flaherty and Lynn Ahrens, Jason Robert Brown, Craig Cornelia, Amanda McBroom. There's so many wonderful songwriters. So the music is still there. It's just not necessarily the hit parade of the day.
Yeah. And I'm just curious, you have Tony Bennett singing with Lady Gaga, and it's been just, it's like miraculous. It's so beautiful and so special. If you had your opportunity to sing with somebody else, who would that be?
Well, I sure have a great time singing with Alex Rybak, which you will hear in our show. But, and I've just finished doing a celebration of Sheldon Harnick and Charles Strauss music with the incredible K.T. Sullivan, who I adore singing with. But you're asking me what celebrity?
Celebrity and the young one, if you will.
Oh, well, Michael Bublé or Harry Connick. Harry Connick's about to open on Broadway with a Cole Porter tribute, and I'd love to get up there and bat some Cole Porter lyrics back and forth with him.
Mm. I mentioned to you before that music transforms people in ways they can't even describe. Do you relate to that?
Oh, without question. One of my absolute passions is to take our music into a retirement centers, assisted living, places where sometimes the music is the only way to connect to people. It will take someone with memory care issues to a place where they can suddenly connect with life, with their emotions. There was a wonderful actress named Marion Seldes, Broadway star, and she developed something called Louis Bell's palsy, where she was absolutely there in her head, but could not communicate. And I would go and sit in her apartment and just sing these songs to her, and out of her mouth would come a word or two. So I knew she was hearing it. She would start chuckling if I was doing something funny, a Noah Coward song or a Jimmy Durante song. She it clearly was reaching her. And that's where my hope is with this music, is that maybe Lady Gaga's audience will discover who Tony Bennett is and discover the kind of music that they're singing together and realize that in this world of all this bombardment of stimulation, you can actually go into a room and have one person sing songs that have meaning, insight, wisdom to you. And I that is my great hope, that will never go away. The songs in particular that Alex and I are singing, these Sammy Kahn songs, are timeless. They illustrate the human condition with a wisdom and wit that is timeless. So I have yet to see a young person who comes to a cabaret act who's not mesmerized.
What got you started in cabaret from the beginning, Jeff? I mean, tell us how it started for you. What was your inspiration to get into this particular genre of music? And, because you've won quite a bit of awards, especially recently. So just maybe speak on what your inspiration was and how you got started.
Well, my first love was Broadway music. And so my first dream, my first Broadway show that I saw was called The Happy Time, with a score by Kander and Ebb. And it had children my age in it. So the dream was sparked. And then while I was in high school, Barbara Cook, who I had loved from her Broadway cast albums, crossed over into this genre of cabaret. So there actually was an album where I could hear just her voice. And her authentic personal voice, carrying messages that I chose to believe were from her heart and soul to me in a unique manner. Even if I knew the song, like I Love a Piano, it was a revelation to hear how she sang it. And I saw Liza Minnelli do the same thing. Someone who in place of a Broadway show, was doing their own concert and took me on exactly the same emotional journey that a Broadway show could do, only it was one artist with one point of view. So, you know, when I got to New York in 1979, the very first thing I did was go to Reno Sweeney's and pay the $7 cover to hear Barbara Cook. And, you know, a dream was born. I thought, if I'm not going to get cast in a Broadway show, which didn't seem to be happening, I could certainly find artistic expression in this sort of format with these small rooms. And I got very lucky. I met Alex Rybeck for my very first show in 1983. And we've been working together for whatever that is, 36 years or 37 years. I've got very lucky because he does exactly what Wally Harper did for Barbara Cook, and definitely what Kander and Ebb were able to do for Liza Minnelli, which is to help these artists find their musical voice.
Yeah.
And that's, that's what I hope people will
Yeah, ahead. I'm sorry to interrupt. Did you actually work with Liza Minnelli?
I have had the great good fortune of her coming to hear me twice and her inviting me over to her apartment to do shows that she wasn't able to get to see live. She's had Alex and I did a tribute to her father's movie music called Dancing in the Dark, and she didn't get to the Algonquin to see it. So she asked if we could come do it. And a wonderful Broadway singer I work with named Shauna Hicks and I did a tribute to Mickey Rooney and Judy Garland movie music called I Got Rhythm. And she asked to have that performed for her as a salon in her living room with just Billy Stritch and Michael Feinstein in attendance, no pressure. And so, yes,
right.
in that way, I have gotten incredible FaceTime with Liza Minnelli.
Yeah, you know, it's very interesting, Jeff. I actually interviewed Billy Stritch, and his music just it sent me on a sort of projection into the sky because it was so incredible. But what I want to know is, how do we inspire younger people today to listen to some of this music and to perform it? As I said before, each musical piece that I've heard, like the Cole Porter music, sends you up. I can't even explain. It just has such a sensual and romantic way of, you know, like telling a story. And I'm very sad to hear that rap and hip hop and all of that just never addresses those words. Do you have any thoughts about how we inspire younger people to listen to that music?
Well, I'm very much involved with the Mabel Mercer Foundation here in New York City. I have co-hosted and been artistic director for 8 nights of their cabaret convention over the years. And Katie Sullivan, who's the artistic director there, they very much have an outreach program to high schools, where we send out master classes for the students who do love this music. And she always makes sure that there are tickets for them at the cabaret convention every year. We just had our 30th annual cabaret convention. So, you know, she's very actively nurturing young audiences. So that, you know, and I do travel around with Alex and do master classes. We'll be doing one in Florida while we're there in Boca on January, on the 6th. And, you know, we get students of the music in then. Most of them are older than high school kids, but, you know, I mean, it is out there. That's what I think Lady Gaga is probably a good messenger. You know, the fact that she is singing this kind of music is falling on ears that hopefully, you know, will turn on a light.
And I see... Well, I was gonna say, I see your concerts are on Google Play, Spotify, so they're online to some of the more millennial platforms. Isn't that correct, Jeff?
It is. Yes. Mm-hmm. We're out there. It's you know, and that's just the way it is this day and age. You know, young people find the music that resonates with them, and our hope is that maybe through your program or a lot of different outreaches that people find this music.
Yeah.
But I do think these lyrics are like Shakespeare. They illustrate the human condition in a way that will never go out of style, and it will always be played. I firmly believe that 100 years from today, these songs like that we'll be doing of Sammy Kahn, Call Me Irresponsible, Time After Time, I Fall in Love Too Easily, Teach Me Tonight, It's Magic, and All the Way. These songs will be heard 100 years from today, I promise you. We won't be here to hear it, perhaps. But but the wisdom, you know, there is, they are just, they're so profoundly special.
You know, could you interpret your music, for example, in a lot of places, and one of the types of music that I love is happens to be jazz and also blues. Can any of the music that you sing be interpreted in that kind of genre? Like in jazz, can you jazz it up? Can you blues
Absolutely.
It up?
Absolutely. Well, I hope that your audiences will come to hear the different styles, the different textures that we bring to songs they may know, that they will know, but we bring a lot of different approaches to it. And I just finished, I'm about to open in London with a wonderful savant jazz player named John Weber, who hosts a program on NPR, a jazz program. And he and I are in bringing a Sondheim songbook to London. And John absolutely brings a jazz sensibility to what we're doing, and Sondheim has come and heard it, and he has given it his blessing. He told John, I loved all the changes, I wish there were more, which is an astonishing thing for Stephen Sondheim to say. So yes, you absolutely can, these songs are open to being interpreted all sorts of different ways.
How is it, what is it like to play or sing for somebody like Sondheim?
It was absolutely terrifying. I was so excited. I couldn't wait for him to hear what we were doing. And then in the moment, it just, he's somebody I've revered all my musical life. I've been aware of who he was and who he is. And, it, you know, and he is quite the critic of his, of how people, you know, he's very protective of his songbook. And
sure.
It was, anyway, he was very kind, and to this day he's very kind. He has been quite, for lack of a better word, nurturing to seeing us go forward with our point of view on his body of work.
You know, it's a very interesting thing, Jeff, that you're talking about people like Sondheim. You, you're fabulous yourself, and yet you have this passion for other people's music, and you really like to perform their music. And I'm just wondering if you've ever written any music that you can kind of tell us about.
Well, not well. Actually, the week after I'm performing at those two Florida venues, the Delray Beach Playhouse and the Meisner in Boca, Tova Felchu is coming to town with her Leona Helmsley show. And I am the director of that show. So I will be staying the second week to put her into both venues. And there is a song within this Tova is Leona that I wrote the draft of the lyrics. And
I want to just tell you a little story, Jeff. I actually interviewed Tova twice. And in the first time that I interviewed her, I was so impressed with her. You can't even believe it. She was talking about climbing Mount Kilimanjaro. She was talking about her father and the influence that her parents had on her, which leads me to the question of, you know, when you have a child who said, I'm going to go into showbiz, okay? I'm going to be an actor. I'm going to be a singer. Many parents will say, oh, my God, why are you choosing a profession like that? Because it's so difficult to get any kind of, well, job, any kind of money. the talent that is out there is just unbelievable. And you have that competition. Did your family try to talk you out of going into this field?
Absolutely not. They believed that if I could make a living at it, I should do it. And, you know, my mom found the first show. We were living in Chicago at the time that I auditioned for when I was 9, which was The Music Man, because I loved that cast album with Barbara Cook. And I went in and got the part of a little boy in that Winthrop. And from that, I got a talent agent. And by the time I was 10, I was I had my union cards and was doing jingles in Chicago. And my parents facilitated that, not like stage parents, but just if I wanted to go in for an audition or a job, they would figure out how to get me downtown into the city. And they've, you know, just they see that's where my bliss has always been. And they've definitely fanned the flame and taken great joy in it.
And would you say that to this to young people today who told you that they wanted to go into that field?
I would say what they told me when I went to college, which is if there's anything, anything that gives you a glimmer of joy in your life that's not show business, go for it. But if it's where your heart is, you know, follow it. Because I didn't know that directing would become part of my resume. So I did direct a show when I was in high school that starred the wonderful, soon-to-be Tony nominee, Liz Calloway. I spotted that talent. You know, so anyway, there are lots of ways to find a living doing what you love in the world of entertainment. And I've been very blessed to have some great affirming outlets in my life.
What's the significance of getting an award? Do you value that award? And if you do, I'm just curious why. I mean, I know that sounds dumb. Everybody likes
it's
awards.
It's not dumb at all.
Go ahead.
No, the very first one I won was the Manhattan Association of Cabaret Award as Best Male Vocalist in 1988. And that was an affirmation from the cabaret community in New York City that I was doing something right. And so I took that to mean that the next show I do will maybe get more attention and I should take it more seriously. So I hired a director, Sarah Louise Lazarus, who I had studied with, and I hired a publicist. And I picked a theme. That was my first theme show. It was a tribute to the lyrics of Betty Comden and Adolph Green. And that show took me away. That show changed my life. That was the show that got my first New York Times review. It took me out of the showcase rooms into a major cabaret room where I did 7 shows a week. Betty Comden and Adolph Green were alive at the time. They were supportive. They came to see it. It's how I met Sammy Kahn, whose lyrics I'm singing now. So yes, an award to me is an affirmation. And
yeah.
Those kind of, because what they also told me in college is if you're going to go into the business, you should be getting signed. There should be affirmation. You're getting cast in shows. You're, you know, there's some, or you're winning an award, some sort of validation to let you know that the universe is supporting what you're doing.
Wow. Yeah. I like that.
Yeah, it's very interesting too. Josh, you're younger. I have to admit that my co-host Joshua Schmoody is younger than me. Do you have a question for Jeff that's, you know, kind of relates to what young people are thinking about music?
No, I mean, he's on. I would just say the best advice would be to get on the main millennial channels, and I think he's on there. I just think it's a different. I think the Lady Gaga thing is something that will help benefit the whole cabaret movement. I know Amy Winehouse wasn't. I don't think it was cabaret. I don't think you'd classify that as cabaret. But that was another example of kind of like, you know, millennial artists getting with older artists and kind of teaming up and collabing. And I think we'll see more of that in the future. What do you think, Jeff?
Well, I love that answer, and I adored Amy Winehouse, and I mentioned Katie Sullivan. Her definition of cabaret is where you can hear the words and they tell a story, and both Lady Gaga and Amy Winehouse do that in their work. You can understand the words and they tell a story, and so it's no surprise to me that they would cross over so successfully to, or be attracted to, the kind of content in the Great American Songbook. And I love Michael Bublé is crossing over. I mean, he has a younger audience.
Mm-hmm. What's your favorite instrument, Jeff?
My favorite instrument?
I know.
He's a
singer,
right?
About that.
Okay.
I don't know whether, do I say the voice or do I say the piano?
Ah, wait a minute. That's very interesting. You consider the voice an instrument.
Oh, absolutely.
And how do you train it?
How do you maintain it?
Maintain it and train it.
Well, if I could go back and talk to my 15-year-old self, I certainly started voice lessons then, which was very smart, and it was somebody who trained classically, so, which is not that I sing any classical repertoire, but it did teach me breath control and respect for that kind of music. But I would have told myself, find a song interpretation coach as well. The big changing point in my life was meeting Sarah Louise Lazarus, who has directed most of my shows. She was the first person who really taught me how to take a lyric and make it my own, which is our number one job. More than hitting notes on pitch, in cabaret, you need to be telling a story that's authentic and personal. A singer like Mabel Mercer used to just sit on the chair and speak her lyrics for an hour. And that's where Frank Sinatra learned everything he knows about phrasing, was from Mabel Mercer, who just didn't sing hardly a note. So the song interpretation combined with vocal, vocal training would be the two suggestions I would make.
And there's a show on Broadway, and it's been so popular and so expensive that my tickets is Hamilton, and the music that they use is rap. Now, that is on Broadway, rap on Broadway. What do you think about that?
Well, I think it's fantastic. It was one of the great nights of theater that I've seen. I knew something was special. Like the first time I heard Sondheim, I knew that musical theater had changed. He expanded what our ears can hear and what kind of intelligence, contemporary intelligence, can infuse a show. And I feel like Lin-Manuel Miranda did the same thing. He has changed going forward. It's just a wider fulcrum of what we can have.
Right,
it's wonderful.
Right. So what? We're almost at the end of the show. So I would love for you to tell our audience where you're going to be and what's in store for them, and what's next in the life of Jeff Horner.
Well, wow, that's a lot. Well, I will be January 3rd and 4th at the Delray Beach Playhouse, singing Sammy Kahn, and then we're going to take that show on Sunday to the Meisner Park Cultural Center in Boca, and we'll do a matinee there. So that's where you can hear me with Alex Rybeck and our trio singing Sammy Kahn all the way. Then if you want to hop over to London, I'll be there January 17th, 18th, and 19th singing Sondheim. And I will be down in Siesta Keys, Florida in February singing one of my favorite shows, the 1959 Broadway Songbook, which is our celebration of the 21 musicals you could have heard on Broadway in 1959. And if you're in New York, I'll be making my solo debut at Feinstein's 54 Below with our London Sondheim show on March 18th. So those are the biggies coming up.
Where can people find you online, Jeff?
JeffHarnar.com. And the trick is to spell it H-A-R-N-A-R, Harnar, but it's pronounced Harnar. But I just launched a new website, revised website last week. And if they sign up to my newsletter on the website, we send out electronic updates too.
Oh, great.
Well, our guest today has been Jeff Horner, who's an amazing musician who uses his voice in ways that people just absolutely will applaud. And he's going to be all over the world very shortly. But right now, he's going to be in Florida, which I'm very glad because I happen to reside there, and I'm going to listen to him. And I would say to our audience, if you want an experience of your life.
The High Life Show and media by which it is distributed hold no responsibility for the validity or accuracy of information on this site. Listeners and viewers are advised to seek the input of a professional whom represent the subject before acting on any information or advice. The High Life show and media by which it is distributed hold no responsibility for the validity or accuracy of information on this site or podcast. Listeners and viewers are advised to seek the input of a professional whom represents the subject before acting on any information or advice. Thank you.